How's that, Jerry?
Can you hear me okay? Okay. It's not unusual that little children look at me in the restaurant and I know that they're saying I'm Santa Claus. Hey, one time Beth and I were having lunch in a restaurant and this little boy comes up to me. He's about 4 years old and he's looking really intently at me. I know he thinks I'm Santa Claus. So I ask him, have you been behaving? And he very soberly nods like this. His big sister, about 5 or 6 years old, is standing behind him. And she's very vigorously shaking her head no, that he's not behaving. But Santa Claus is much better. We live half a block away from a school. And a couple of years back when I would go past there, they'd say, oh, Osama bin Laden. I don't hear that anymore. Anyway. Getting to what I want to say today, first of all, I wish to commend the musicians. That was wonderful. You guys played very well. Keep on practicing. Not that you're not doing well, but with practice, things get better. Little story. About 5 years ago, we were living in Lafayette, Indiana, attending Faith Church, and they had wonderful music there, but I had much homesickness for my little church in Brazil. But the fellow who played the cello was about your size. A little bit older. He was Chinese, and he had his music on his telephone sitting on a little stand in front of him. But he reminded me of one of my young friends in Brazil, so when I saw him playing cello, it was like being back in Brazil, and that helped. Anyway, Beth and I have been in Brazil for 26 years. This church is one of the first churches, perhaps the very first church, where we made a presentation about the work that we would be doing in Brazil. I'm guessing that was about 1990. And this church still has the same pastor, and there's only one other supporting church that still has the same pastor after all these years. That's quite marvelous. During the Sunday school hour, we talked a little bit about what life is like in Brazil, a little bit more detail about some of the life in the Indian village, and seeing all the young people who showed up after Sunday school. If you wish to see the slides afterwards, I'll show them again after the service over if you'd like. I have some different slides for now. When I was a child growing up, my father was a farmer, and I thought I would be a farmer like he was, and I was interested in that and was making plans to be a farmer. When I was about 12 years old, we went to visit my father's uncle in Minneapolis, and he had National Geographic magazines. I had never seen them before, and one of those magazines was an article about Indians in Brazil. And I felt four things very specifically, that my life's work was to be a missionary, a physician in Brazil with Indian people. So that solved a lot of problems, like I got to finish high school, obviously. I was still in grade school. Had to go to college. You might as well go to college where they have the medical school, in this case, Grand Forks, North Dakota, University of North Dakota. Might as well take the undergraduate course. That gives you into medicine the easiest. That was chemistry. That was no problem. And then go to medical school and did that. And then back in those days, there still was, obligatory military service, so I had to spend some time in the Army. Wound up at Fort Campbell, met my wife here. Well, she wasn't my wife then, but eventually she became my wife, and then we were looking for a mission board that worked with Indians in health in Brazil. Because, like the Southern Baptists have a lot of missionaries in Brazil, but they don't work with Indians, because if they work with Indians, that causes problems with the Justice Department. Wycliffe works with Indians, but they don't work in health. So I went to visit my aunt and uncle, who were missionaries way in the south of Brazil, and eventually met some folks at that time I met folks from the Association of Baptists for World Evangelism. And they were starting a hospital. And I talked with them, but God didn't open the door there. So I went back to Brazil a year later, visit some more. At that time, there were two couples down from Canada to visit my aunt and uncle, and one of those gals had gone to college with a gal who was now a missionary nurse off an Indian village somewhere. And they were going to visit her, so I went with them, and that's how I encountered folks from what was then UFM International. God did open the door there. The next year I went to Africa, to Cameroons, to get some experience in a different sort of medicine. At that time I was working here in the emergency room at this hospital, enjoying that, but My goal was to get to Brazil. Had a good time in Africa. Saw how medicine was done. Less sophisticated than in the United States. A good experience. Spent a week going from village to village with a village health team. That was a good experience. Came back to the United States. Got married. Beth and I went to Brazil again so she could see what she was getting into. And then we went to candidate orientation, and not too long after that we came to this church to tell about what we wanted to do in Brazil. We went to Brazil in 1992. We had one daughter at the time, not quite 2 years old. Beth was about 7 months pregnant, and Tina was born in Brazil 2 months later. We studied Portuguese there. For me, it was 7 hours a day, 5 days a week. For a year, and I began to attend with, there was a missionary nurse operating the village health worker program in the north part of our area, so I began to go to Indian villages with her to attend health needs in Indian villages. And that work went on, for several years, but there was in transition. At that time, only about one-fourth of the Indian villages in that area had any sort of health care at all. Either from our mission or another mission or the government. So some folks got together and they wanted to start a program to train village health workers for every village in this area. So I participated in this. We had about 400 students during 2 years to train a village health worker, at least one for every village. And I had the privilege to see the death rate drop drastically for little children. We had the statistics so we could see in the second year of our teaching that we had made a big impact. Just the simple things of helping Indians to be able to give oral rehydration salts to the mother when the baby had diarrhea so they could keep the baby hydrated without having to put an IV in. It really works very well. Made a big difference. Then the government decided that was a good program for the whole country, so the government decided to officialize it and then take over the health care. I did participate in that for a while. At that level, I was training or helping to train the nurses who would be supervising the Indian village health workers. As the medical side of things is winding down in that area, the Indians who live to the south of us have a much different culture, much more primitive. They have much less contact with the dominant society, specifically the Yanomami Indians. So I began to train village health workers in that part of the state. Very different type of work. And gradually the government did assume more and more of that work, but it wasn't a beginning. The first time I went into a certain Indian village, I was ready to teach, and the missionary there said, the chief slash witch doctor has just showed up. He'd like to speak to the people. It's his village. He can say what he wants. It's his village. And it was interesting. He stood up and said, you young people have to learn what this guy has to teach so that you can take care of us when he's not here. And, yeah, good. And I thought, you know, there's this Brazilian sociologist, Paulo Freire, that even Americans study at times. He said you have to build on what the people already know. And I thought, I'm going to ask him about what medicine, what things were like before the missionaries came. Missionaries had come to that village about 25 years earlier. He said, well, before the missionaries came, we had a bad cold go through here, the flu. And a lot of people got pneumonia. My wife died, and all my children except my littlest girl died. And that's what used to happen. And the students, my students, they were about 25 years of age and younger. They had never seen that sort of thing. Because in their lifetime, there had always been a missionary there to treat things like pneumonia. And at times, there was a lot of pneumonia. And at times people complained, oh, the missionary is treating too many cases of pneumonia, or he's overdiagnosing. No, he's not. There's a lot of pneumonia at times. And it made a big difference. Now, sometimes people will say, well, you're supposed to preach the gospel to these people. You're not supposed to get wrapped up in health care and education. Look, if your kid is sick, and I can help you. And I say, well, that's not my job to help you. That's really not much of a witness, is it? And actually, the way that the mission work was established in our whole area, in the north part where I worked first, it was a doctor and a pastor traveling together. The doctor would treat people and the pastor would teach. And in the south area, it was the same deal. The missionaries went in some cases, the government asked them to go in to do basic health work. And the government really didn't care what else they did as long as they kept Indians from dying. And in missions nowadays, yes, there is a lot of specialization that there wasn't 50 years ago. But healthcare has been part of missions for many, many years. The government has taken over the healthcare work for the among the Indian people. And it's going along so-so. But things are changing. Actually, right at 20 years ago, I had just come back from the United States. I was teaching in an Indian village that day, and at the break time in the morning, several people came up to talk to me. And one of the last person in the line was this little Indian lady that I had never seen before. And the first thing she said to me was, Dr. Tim, my husband and I have been praying that you would help our son. And I had no idea what she was talking about. I had no idea she was. So I asked, and she explained. Oh, then I understood. I knew her son. I knew her husband, and I knew her son. And we talked a bit more, and he was interested in going to medical school. And I knew that. And then she said, but my youngest son, he's the smart one. I said, well, what does he want to do? He wants to be a doctor, too. I said, well, I want to talk to him, too. So about a month later, she brought my son number one, and a month after that, she brought my son number three. Well, son number three wanted to go to medical school. He had high school out of the way. In Brazil, medical school happens right after high school, but you have to pass a very hard entrance exam. And just about everybody who goes to medical school has to spend a few years doing college prep work or college prep course. He did that for 4 years and passed the exam. He was the first Indian in our state to get into any medical school anywhere. And he's now a practicing physician. Another young fellow came on board at the same time. He wound up doing medical school just across the border in Venezuela. When he came back to Brazil, his first job was actually to work in some of the villages that I had worked 20 years earlier, which I thought was very interesting. Those two fellows are practicing physicians. There are three more fellows in medical school and about a half a dozen who are striving to get into medical school. These young men do college prep course, but then they need somebody to answer questions on chemistry or biology. Something else they need help in is essays, composition. In Brazil, your composition is about 1/4 or 1/3 of your college entrance exam. And it's got one page, 15 to 25 lines. There's certain rules about it. If you don't have a good composition, forget it. You're not going to college. Unless it's something that has no competition at all, like physics or something, but anyway, so that's one of the things I do is answer questions about chemistry and work exercises and put my molecule set together to show them how the benzene ring works and things like that. And I correct several essays every week because most of the time when the students have in their class, they do an essay, the teacher reads it and put a grade on it. But the student doesn't know what was good and what wasn't good. So when I do it, I sit down with him and I read it and say, well, your introduction here isn't very focused, or this sentence structure is kind of strange. This is not the right word for this. And I think it's kind of ironic. Portuguese is not my native language, but I'm correcting essays in Portuguese. But that's been very interesting work. The church that we attend is a little Baptist church. It's growing. People keep coming, or better to say, God keeps bringing people to the church. I was the teacher for the adult Sunday school class for a few years. And then about 5 years ago, I guess it was, I was here in the United States and I got a email. Tim, would you consider being the teacher for the young people? Okay. So I have students from about 15 to 25 years of age for Sunday school. We have been in our quarterly for about 2 years. Quarterly, by the way, 3-month book. But we don't go very fast. But I try to get them to think, to work. Why do we believe what we believe? What does this verse really mean? And since analyzing texts is part of a lot of tests in Brazil, you have a paragraph and then they ask you questions about it. I divide my students up into little groups of three or sit at tables and say, piece of paper, okay, what does this verse say? What are the verbs here? What are people supposed to be doing in this verse? And they hem and haw a bit, but on the other side of the coin, at times, it's really gratifying. One of the young ladies on the praise team started to date a fellow who wasn't a Christian. So she couldn't be on the praise team. So that had to go to the church, what do you call it, business meeting. And yes, the church decided she'd have to be on suspension. So the next Sunday for my young people, the first question I say to them, what is the goal of putting this gal on suspension? And the first response, restoration. My young people knew that the church is in the business of restoring people, of getting people right with God. And I'm very proud that my kids knew that. And it's funny in a way. I said, we're not after to break her up from her boyfriend. What we really want is her boyfriend to get saved. And a couple of weeks later, of all weird things, I'm doing the evening service. I have no idea what the evening service was about. I don't remember. But what I do remember, when I got done speaking and the pastor came up front to make closing remarks and had an invitation, and who comes forward to announce that he's been born again? Her boyfriend. So he's now baptized. They're both attending college. They're planning to get married eventually. And so it goes. A little bit about the Indian work that we do. I don't know if this thing is still awake. Oh, yes. We work in Boa Vista. Beth and I live in the city. It's about 300,000 people. Now it's probably got 50,000 Venezuelans in there because we're just about 100 miles from the border. And Venezuela is a mess. It's a sad situation. Anyway, the state is about the size of Kentucky and Tennessee together. To the north of Boa Vista are the tribes that live in the grassland. They've had more contact with the dominant society. To the south of Boa Vista, it's rainforest, and these are people that have had very little contact with the dominant society. And the word dominant society, just instead of saying white people, because white people in Brazil aren't always white, but it's the non-Indians. Anyway, we're way up there in the north. That's fine. If you could fly a commercial flight, it would be 4 hours from Miami to Boa Vista. But the nearest commercial flight is Manaus, an hour to the south. So we fly 5 hours from Miami south to Manaus and then fly an hour north to Boa Vista. Back when that flight wasn't available, we had to fly 8 hours south from Miami to São Paulo and then fly 4 hours back to Boa Vista. But American Airlines flies Miami to Manaus now. Okay. This is a little village in the jungle. Actually, it's kind of a big village. It's about, nowadays, 1,000 people. The jungle's kind of raggedy right here because they have made their fields there, and then the fields, the soil's only good for about 3 years, and then they abandon it, and the jungle takes it over. So that's why the jungle looks pretty raggedy right there. The fellow in the white shirt has been working in this village about 35 years. He's working on translating the New Testament. He's getting old like I am. He probably won't be able to live in the village much more time, but he's working very hard with translation and doing a lot of teaching, teaching in big groups, teaching in little groups, discipling, sharing his life with people. This young fellow, very interesting story. The Yanomami people as a whole have been very, very resistant to the gospel. This young man, when his mother was pregnant with him, she was kidnapped because in this village there weren't enough women for the men. So they solved that problem by going down the river some distance and kidnapping some women so there'd be more women for them. And his mother was pregnant with him. Now, normally, when a man kidnaps a woman and she's pregnant, either he beats her to make her lose the baby, or when the baby is born, he kills the baby because he doesn't want another man's child. But God had plans for this child, so God protected his child. And this child grew up, and he was sensitive to the gospel. And he is the main church leader in this village. Ezekiel is his name. A few years ago, just a few miles to the south, the various Indian tribes got together to have a conference for church leaders from various tribes. And this tribe was invited to participate because they lived in the area. While some of the other villages in his tribe wanted, or one other village, wanted to participate also. Now, they weren't Christians. There's no Christians in our village. That's completely closed to the gospel. So it's one of these questions. Well, are you going to let some non-Christians come to a Christian meeting? They decided to let them come to the meeting. Well, they get together, they start the meeting. The meeting's being conducted in Portuguese, and the other tribes speak Portuguese fairly well in addition to their native language. But these folks don't speak much Portuguese. So it was decided that the Indians, the Yanomami Indians at this meeting, would meet separately. And then they could have their meeting in their language. Now, the interesting thing is the people from this other village are his blood relatives. His mother was kidnapped. She was probably one of their relatives. And since he is their blood relative, he has weight when he speaks. They're not going to listen to just anybody, but since he's their relative, he is important. So he had about 3 days to explain to his relatives, his blood relatives, where his family, his mother had grown up, what the gospel was all about. And when it was done, the people said they wanted to hear more. So I don't know if he's been able to go back to tell them more or not. But God opens doors in some very unusual ways. There have been folks who have definitely shown a transformed life. So yes, there's baptism. This is in the little river that runs right through that village. We place a lot of emphasis that people have God's word in their own language. So, in the case of these people, the missionaries first had to learn the language, and then they had to develop an alphabet because they didn't have a written language. Then they have to teach the people to read, and they have to translate God's word. And the missionary is working with a group of folks there to evaluate a translation. I don't know if you've ever worked a translation or a different language. There's a lot of pitfalls. Things that translate one way mean something else. But it's hard work, but worthwhile. A couple in the book of Luke, the book of Acts, that have been translated into that particular Yanomami dialect. This is a picture of a communion service. This is the first communion service that was held in this village. The missionaries felt that these Indians had come to the place where they should celebrate the Lord's Supper. Ezekiel, being a solid Christian church leader, was chosen to actually celebrate the first communion with these people, or amongst these people. What it doesn't show in this picture is that it took 36 years to get there. Now think about that for a minute. This picture is a couple years old. So 40-some years ago, missionaries went to that village. Churches just like this were supporting those missionaries. And think about it. When the missionary comes back to his supporting church and asks, how's it going? Oh, we're doing fine. How's the church going? Oh, we don't have a church yet. Got any believers? No. And then they go back for 4 more years, come back, no visible results, some churches would get kind of anxious. Oh, you've been there this many years and haven't got a church yet? Now, I don't know who was the first Christian in the village. It possibly was this young man. I don't know. But it took 36 years to get to this point. But this is God's church. That church there is just like this church in that these are people who love God, who are in a difficult situation. They're developing their faith as they read the Bible and as they strive to live in a way that honors God, just like we do here. They speak a different language, but there are brothers and sisters in Christ. And you have been part of this work. It's been many churches from different parts of the world working together that God's name would be planted in that particular village. Now, sometimes people say, missions have gone out. There's missions all over the world. It's expensive to send missionaries. It's hard work. It's dangerous. There's strange diseases. Then in like United States, you have West Nile disease and things like that. The Bible teaches us to pray to the Lord of the harvest that he would send forth laborers. That's the biblical instruction. Missions is God's work. It's done by God's people. And the biblical instruction is that we pray that God would send forth laborers into the harvest. That is still legitimate. It's still valid. Every single mission post that our mission has is shorthanded. Every single one. Once in a while they get a full team and then something happens, somebody has to leave. There's still need for missionaries and missionaries with many different skills. 60 years ago, your average missionary was somebody who went to Bible college or seminary and then went out and he had to do everything. People are more specialized nowadays. God uses all sorts of people to do his work, and there still is need for missionaries. So pray the Lord of harvest for more workers. Pray for the Indians, our Indian brothers and sisters in Christ who are growing. They face challenges that we don't understand. But God knows, and God's taking care of them, and they're growing. And pray for the missionaries who are out there working in these situations. They also face challenges that we don't understand in this country. I was talking with my wife just a while ago. What's it like to live when there's not Walmart? Or Lowe's? Yes, we can buy groceries where we live, but it's different. One of Beth's complaints is she'll have a few things on her grocery list, and she goes to the store. Well, they don't have everything, so you got to go to another store. If I need bolts, I go to a certain store, and if I need something else, I go to another store. And you just learn after a while, but yes, pray for the missionaries in their work also. A little thing about God protecting his church. I was in a big meeting with about 150 people. He was there. And one of the Indian leaders, who's very opposed to missionaries, at least officially, he will speak very bad about missionaries and come up to me later and say, "Oh, Dr. Tim, don't worry about what I said. I don't really mean that." But he didn't tell anybody else that. Anyway, this other guy stood up at the meeting and said, "We want the government to be monitoring what the missionaries and what the military is doing in our area because they're ruining our culture." This young man stood up instantly and said, "Wait a minute. We want to hear what the white men have to say. And we will decide for ourselves what we want to believe. And we don't accept anybody telling us what we have to believe." That is God's people defending God's word. I guess we might have a couple of minutes if there's questions. Yes. They do not have the Bible yet in their own language. They have some of the books of the New Testament. The missionary is working on the New Testament. Another missionary across the border in Venezuela has produced a New Testament. I have a copy of that not with me. And it's close. So, like, this fellow can read it and understand it because he's pretty smart. They maybe have about half of the New Testament available in their language. Okay. The first time we came back from the field in about 1997, on the Sunday that we were in the Princeton Baptist Church, the Makushi New Testament was being dedicated in Boa Vista, almost the very same hour. And 5 years later, when we were back in the United States, the YY Bible, the whole Bible, was being dedicated in Brazil. That's another story. The three brothers went to Brazil right around the time of World War II. One brother and his wife worked with the YY people for many, many years. He translated the New Testament. She made a songbook of 500 songs. These are very musical people. He got old. He came back to the United States and continued to translate. They would send the disc. Remember when you restored thing on a disc to Brazil instead of printing the whole thing out and sending this bundle of papers? And they would print it out in Brazil and take it to the village. And the missionary who was still there would help the church leaders with the verifying the translation. Well, the church leaders were smart men. And they said, old Bob is old. He's like 80 years old already, or 75 years old. And if he dies, there's nobody else in the world who can do this. We got to get on the stick. So they went to the missionary lady and said, give us the translation. We'll check it. If we have questions, we'll come discuss it with you. And so they were able to get it all done and all checked and sent to the printer and printed and back in Brazil before Bob died. Other questions? I'm sorry?
Do they have many wars?
Yes and no. In this village, it's peaceful. But I went to a village one time where their big roundhouse, the outside wall was made out of sticks of wood, so you couldn't shoot arrows through it. And inside the house, they had piles and piles of sticks. They're about this long and about that big around. It's for beating on each other. So if somebody came through the door, they could beat on. In that region, there still is a lot of violence. There's still a lot of people killing each other. So the health teams can't just go from one village to the next, because if it happens to be to an enemy village, the Indians that accompany them through the jungle would get killed when they got close to the other village. So there is some more going on. He is the one who's most advanced. There are some other fellows who are quite capable, but he is the one most advanced. Okay. I told you that I had worked training village healthcare workers, and that we had reduced a lot the number of children who died in early childhood. Traditionally, about half the children died. So, say a mother would have 8 kids, 4 would live to be adult. Nowadays, if a mother has 8 kids, she's probably got 8 adults in a few years. The birth rate is coming down a little bit, but these Indian villages have a lot of kids. And even in the other part where they've had more contact with the whites, the families tend to be large, although they are having smaller families now. Yes. Anything that you can do for us? We're getting kind of old, so we have most of the stuff in Brazil that we need. But once in a while, there's something that you do need. Like, just as an example, I was working on the ceiling of my house, and I had tin snips with the short jaws for heavier metal, and it broke. And at that time, there was not another one in the north of Brazil. So I found a picture in the Sears online and sent that to my mother and said, Mom, I really need this snips. And she went to Sears and got it, and it was like $10, and put it in a big envelope and sent it to me, and it got there in about 2 weeks so I could keep working on my ceiling. There can be specific things that aren't available in a certain country. A few years back, it was things like salad dressing. But we have salad dressing in Boa Vista now. The things are advancing. But once in a while, there is something that somebody needs. And to put, I know this is very vague, but the other side of the coin is if you say, if you need something, we'll track it down for you. That can be useful. And for other missionaries, too. It depends on the part of the world, and our part of the world has changed a lot. When we first went to Brazil, the only window screen around is what missionaries brought to Brazil, because there was no window screen in the markets. There wasn't any duct tape, either. Nowadays, you can get duct tape. It's expensive, but you can get it. One time, a church rounded up a bunch of duct tape, never going to send it to us, but didn't get around to it. So when we came back, they give us this big box of duct tape. Now who has to pay to get it to Brazil? Anything else? Our time is about up. I'm sorry.
Are the believers brave?
Okay. This is a cultural difference. These Indians are pretty, well, it depends. It's like in some place, in general, people do share their faith. I'm thinking of two situations. One, I was in an Indian village teaching, not in these Indians, but to the north, a different group. And we were in a village that was somewhat hostile to the gospel. And the next morning when I was taking my bath in this little creek, there were three other Indian fellows there. One from the Assembly of God Church, one from the Mission, and one from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. They weren't arguing about theology. They were three Christians standing together in a hostile environment. The other thing I think about, Brazil is quite open about being Christian. Brazil has a lot of Christians as a percentage of the population. It's almost like the United States. So there are a lot of Christians in Brazil. And people have a good idea what Christians are supposed to do, just like in this country. But it's very common. A truck driver will have things about his faith on the side of his truck. In a way, people are more open about the gospel in Brazil than they are in the United States. They're about showing that they're Christian. Anything else? We'll be around for a bit afterwards. And if folks want to see the slides that I showed during Sunday school afterwards, we can do that.